Hello, hello. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EdTech Podcast. I'm just back from Portugal, where I spent last week cycling over 200 miles in preparation for my fundraiser in May, where I will cycle across France for Homerton Hospital's charity arm. I hope wherever you are enjoying some time off work and a chance to reboot. This week was a busy week in EdTech, with Apple itself rebooting their EdTech Play. Thanks to everyone who also fell for my April Fools. In fact, all schools in England will not be using VR in all geography lessons, but thanks for the passionate responses all the same. This week, we've got three great mini interviews covering workload, AI in education, and marking. You'll hear from Priya Lakhani, the CEO of Century Tech, teacher and deputy head Julian Wood, aka Ideas Factory, and the Vocal Recall team in conversation with Mark Anderson and Ollie Lewis, who's head of physics at the Oratory School. Do get in touch with your feedback and keep tuned in the coming weeks for more podcasts from Coventry University, the UK DfE EdTech team, and much more. If you enjoy listening in and you'd like to support the EdTech Podcast, why not check out our Patreon page, contact us about sponsoring an episode, or buy a ticket to the EdTech Podcast Festival in September. Thanks to all my guests this week and you for listening. Here's to some sunny weather wherever you're listening from, and have a great week. Yay! I'm here with Priya Lakhani, CEO of Century Tech, and this podcast has been long in the making, so thank you for your patience. First of all, can you pick a number from 1 to 115?
Okay, let's go for 99.
Oh, on page 99, there we go. Rate yourself. Oh, rate your memory from 1 to 10.
Oh, God, that depends. I'd say 8.
8, that's pretty good. Much better than mine, I think. Rate your diet from 1 to 10.
I see how you missed the rate your sex appeal question, Sophie.
I'm going back to that one.
Rate your diet from 1 to 10. 5.
Rate your sex appeal from 1 to 10.
My husband would say 10. That's what I'm going to say.
Sounds like he sounds like a lovely man, and, you know, he's got good eyesight.
No, I think
well.
He just has the right thing to say at the right time.
Rate your fitness from 1 to 10.
I'd say about 7.
Rate your sense of humour from 1 to 10.
10.
Okay, there we go.
That's only because I laugh at my own jokes. I don't really care what everyone else does.
So, yeah, I mean, we were having a good discussion off topic. For people listening in, that would have probably been the best discussion, but we'll leave that one off limits. But today, it's all about artificial intelligence, so we're going to do a whole episode on that. And first of all, I wanted to ask you about, what is the bullshit guide to artificial intelligence for educators?
It's a long time coming. So I was having a chat with Rose Luckin, Professor Rose Luckin from UCL, who's an expert on AI. And I think actually she was on your podcast recently. And Rose and I were saying that it's alarming how people don't actually know what AI is. And so we could get into an explanation about what it is. But what's really alarming is when they think something is AI when it isn't. And it's taken me 4 years with my amazing team to build Century, this platform where there's a lot of nuances and there's a lot of things you have to learn about how the technology works. But it takes time to actually build an AI platform because it's all about the amount of data that you have and the algorithms and what data scientists can do with that data. And so we thought that it would be really, really important to tell educators, this is what AI is and this is what it isn't, because there's so many words out there being used, like personalized and adaptive and differentiated. And I found that last year at BET, people would come up to me and say, but I've already got the AI platform, it's over there or it's over there. And I think it's just really, really important to say, actually, this is AI, this is what's not AI. And we've just called it the BS Guide to AI. Yeah. So it's like an FAQ. It's launching tomorrow at BET, so I'm really excited about that. And we're just handing it out to everyone and saying, this is what it is, this is what it isn't. And now you can go around and you can actually ask the right questions of technology companies. Because we don't want to end up in a situation that we had only quite recently, which was between 2009 and 2012. We spent £1.4 billion on technology in the UK alone. And as widely reported by Nesta, that was pretty much a waste of money. And so what I'm really concerned about is educators making purchasing decisions thinking technology is something that actually isn't, and then it won't deliver for them in the classroom. We know that budgets are tight, Sophie, so we just want to ensure that people are just well informed.
And if they aren't able to pick up a physical copy of that, where can they go to access
we're going to tweet it. I'll give it to you. you can put it on the website. It's because it's done with UCL, it's, well, with Rose Luckin, it's something that we're just really, really happy to distribute. So we'll probably have it on their website, on our website, give it to the press, put it out on Twitter, on Facebook, on the usual sort of social media channels. And also we'll ask people to spread it. So it's not particularly company focused in any sort of way. It is literally, what is it? What, you know, what's machine learning? Neural net, what are all these things? What does it do for me? What can it do for me? And what should I be looking for? And really importantly, what questions should I be asking of those companies using technology and using this sort of technology about my data? So it's really supposed to make educators feel comfortable, because we all know that, you know, when we go to schools and we talk about these big buzzwords, often actually people can withdraw a little bit because they sound quite scary. But I think the purpose is really to tell them what it is and how they can leverage it as a tool to actually make their lives easier, to reduce workload. Damien Hines only talked about reducing workload this week, and Milton just said it on stage at BET today, which was great to hear. And it's just about really, you know, demystifying AI for educators.
It's really interesting on that one, because I saw the TES article and Damien Hines' comments on reducing workload, and then there were a lot of educators on Twitter who commented underneath, and I found that quite insightful.
I read those.
Because it was basically like, well, actually, that means more data, it means more work for us and analysing it, and it doesn't always reduce workload. And
I just think they're using the wrong tools. I mean, frankly, look, I can be, should be really straight about this. The schools that use Century, it's my only experience, I've seen them use other platforms. My experience is that every single one of those teachers say, it saves me time. And the stats that we've had so far is it saves up to 1 hour per week per class, up to a cap of 6 hours. I've had teachers say to me, I've got my Saturday, Sunday nights back. I've had another one say, I'm leaving if they ever stop using this platform in our school. And it's about the technology. If the technology, and it's not just Century. There is technology out there that is intuitive. It doesn't take too much time to learn how to use it. It should be as intuitive as, you know, those big platforms that we all know, like the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, in terms of shopping. If it's intuitive and it's not death by data, it gives you what you need to know at the right time. And if you want to delve deeper, you can delve deeper. I mean, the amount of data that Century have on it for an educator is vast, I'm not going to lie. But you don't get it all in one go. It's spreadsheets worth of data. We have dashboards, and they're built by teachers. They're designed with teachers. We have an entire team of teachers at Century who are the product team. And they say, well, you know, there's a chart here that we've paper prototyped. And frankly, it might be useful one day, but it's thoroughly useless day to day. So we don't make that a live dashboard that you can see straight away. They say, actually, what I want to know is, where do I need to intervene today in my class? Which child is poorly performing? Which child doesn't understand what the common denominator is? Because the rest of the class that today is multiplying fractions. That's what I want to know. As a physics teacher, I want to know, okay, if there's a child, if there's a reason this child isn't understanding velocity, right? It's because actually they don't know how to solve equations in mathematics, so they can't calculate. That's extraordinary information to have at your fingertips, automatically, and not generated by you by micro marking, micro assessing, setting homework, all of that. That's done automatically by the machine based on the students spending about 20 minutes on it last week. So it is about the technology, and we know that the big systems out there have spreadsheets and spreadsheets of data that you can export, and then you have senior leaders and department heads, you know, I've been there when they're doing it, and they're manipulating the data in such a way so it shows, you know, in a nice intuitive way on a graph. That is time that, frankly, it's just a waste of time. Technology can do that already.
And the industrial strategy that came out last year from the government, what's the government actually doing around artificial intelligence and education? So I know that you've been involved in some committees and so on. So if you can share some of what's happening there.
So I think, what the government said is that we've got £30 million and we're going to invest it in looking at AI, edtech, right? And it's going to be difficult to do. It's a tall order because there aren't that many AI edtech companies out there. Well, there aren't that many edtech companies that are actually using AI. They might say they're an AI company, but if they've been founded within the last year or year and a half, the chances of them having enough data to actually have machine learning in play, to not just have sort of structured data and using advanced data science is very, very slim. Very, very happy to hear if they have, but I think it's widely known in the artificial intelligence communities that that's not really possible. So it's about what they're saying is, we've got this money and we're going to invest in research just to figure out how this works. I've been speaking to the EdTech team at DfE. I'm really proud that they're there and very proud that the UK has a team like that, because that's actually That's pretty forward thinking to have an entire team within the Department of Education who are looking at technology in a sector that is actually quite old when it comes to technology. You know, the furthest we've really gone is from a blackboard to a whiteboard. But, you know, in terms of applying for the funding and seeing the actual initiative, I'm yet to see what that looks like. And I think that we have to be a bit patient because we've obviously had a change of Secretary of State. But I welcome Damien Hines' speech this week that talks about education technology and the fact that it can reduce teacher workload. And that must continue. I think we all celebrated when the Secretary of State's either Nicky Morgan, then Justin Green, started talking about workload. I mean, their biggest problem, and it's everyone's, but it's a national crisis, it should be front page of the press every day, is that 74% of teachers consider quitting their jobs. They spend 60% of their week on data entry and admin, right, which is exactly why we've built this technology. Now that the Secretary of State is talking about this, I think that they're going to do something about it. But yet to see what the initiatives are, and when I do, and when we all do, I'm very, very happy to obviously elaborate on those on another the show.
Absolutely. One thing that I noticed yesterday, and one thing, the whole reason for the podcast really is to share all the different voices involved in education and education innovation and how they differ to one another, and sort of overheard during BET Week. So one particular highlight yesterday was, you know, we need to start profiling earlier. And the way that was kind of communicated sort of, you know, struck me as slightly terrifying.
Profiling kids?
Yeah, as in, you know, data harvesting, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, God. No.
So there's a balance, isn't there? Because, you know, for AI to work, you need that depth of data, but then it's...
Yeah, but the beautiful thing about artificial intelligence and machine learning is that it doesn't profile you for more than a nanosecond. So the beautiful thing about this technology is that, yes, it integrates with all the management information systems in schools. So, you know, you can log in today and I'll know that, you know, student safety might be 12 years old. These were her Key Stage 2 grades. And this is how she's been at school. You know, this is her SEND status potentially. You can learn some pretty sensitive data about students that helps the machine to identify what your needs are. Mm-hmm. And we all have unique needs. I mean, I say everyone has special needs. We just need to figure out how special you are and what makes you special. You know, let's stop putting children in a box, because actually we've got to focus on inclusion. Every time we exclude somebody, we make them feel that they're not normal. Actually, that has a huge impact on a child. It actually can affect the anatomy of your brain as a child.
I've been reading about that recently.
Yeah, so yeah. I did a keynote speech yesterday at ASCOL at the Association of School and College Leaders on inclusion and how actually it can affect your brain. And because obviously Century, we use not only AI and big data, but we also use a lot of neuroscience. And so we have a neuroscientist full time. And I'm very concerned about profiling kids and streaming kids and tiering kids. I mean, I was tiered, you know, into a lower tier in mathematics at one point. It devastated me. And it really knocked my confidence in that particular area. And I'm a mother of two. And I think that I want to have an education system in the United Kingdom where my kids can grow up, all of your kids can grow up, everyone's kids can grow up, where they have this wholesome education and they leave education feeling confident. You know, they can be proactive, resilient, what I call sort of the entrepreneurial mindset, even though you don't need to be an entrepreneur, and where they can study the subjects that they're passionate about. They get their baseline, you know, great education in literacy and numeracy, which is of course very, very important. But let's, for goodness sake, stop putting children in a box. And every, you know, it's just like the flea example. If you get a flea and it goes into a cup, the flea will pop out of the cup. It will fly out. If the flea goes into the cup and we actually put a napkin on top of the cup and cover it for literally more than 5 seconds, if you uncover the cup, because the flea's seen it there, it will never jump out because that ceiling has been put on the flea. And for goodness sake, let's stop doing that to our children. And that's exactly why I built this platform.
There was like an experiment with dogs, not one for dog lovers, this.
I've got a dog.
But they were sort of shocking the dogs in some way.
Yeah.
And after a while, they become conditioned. So when they were able to actually escape from that situation, they then didn't, because you shut down and your response to these kind of traumas is either fight or flight. So and then every subsequent experience after that, you kind of overreact. So you either shut down completely, or you're very aggressive as a result, because you've
given them an environment and you've trained them to behave in that way. So let's not put our children in an environment where they feel that they can't achieve. And this is exactly why I built Century. This is why I want every child in the world to be on Century. The UK is obviously what I'm focused on now, because I'm British and I believe, and you know, there's so many times when we've been offered to go to Silicon Valley and, you know, have endless checks of funding to move, but I've said no. I want to have this in this country. I care about Britain, I'm British, and I want all kids to be on this platform because it doesn't profile you. You log in, it learns how your brain learns, it's incredibly intelligent. It will figure out what you need to know at that time. If you then change and you grow, if your focus levels grow, if your pace of learning changes, your difficulty levels on any given subject, content agnostic, it will then start to adapt immediately to you and then use big data analytics. So obviously every student in the world that's on Sentry is affecting that Sentry brain, the machine behind the scenes. And that way, I want to provide this wholesome education. I really think that I can. I think I've got this opportunity right now with our team to present every child with a baseline great education. And then if they can spend 20 minutes, half an hour a week on it, let's say, the rest of it collaboratively, learning in the classroom, you know, using their fingers and, you know, strengthening their fine motor skills if they're sort of seven, you know, 5 and 7 years old, and actually not on technology, one-to-one, face-to-face with the teacher who's giving them their all the sort of interventions and but also the pastoral care that a child needs, because you cannot replace teachers. There's a big myth, and, you know, we walk around bed and some people say it's disruptive, you know, it's going to be automation. Well, no, I'm sorry, but every single time we think about our education and what we loved and hated about it, we start talking about teachers. These people are incredibly influential, but I want to give them their time back. It is absolutely outrageous that it's one of the most underpaid and under-resourced sectors in our country, and yet they're looking after our kids. So we need to give them their time back, and we need to let them focus on what they've come to do, which is work with kids, work with young people, impart knowledge of a subject that they're passionate about. They didn't come to do data entry. You know, they didn't come to produce special reports for Ofsted, right? Technology can do that, and that's why we built Sentry. So I think if I can focus on the teacher, focus on the child and the personalised journey, I think we've really got something special here. And the nice thing is the proof is in the pudding, right? So we've got case study after case study from schools like Shireland, Sir Mark Grundy School, from schools in Kent, in Sussex, up north, that are saying it has been absolutely transformational.
And just to round off, aside from the bullshit guide to education,
yep,
and use the full naughty word, what other resources would you recommend for people if they are interested in artificial intelligence and understanding how it works? Are there, you know, people to follow?
Yeah, you could the people to follow on. Yeah, that's a really, really good one. So what I might do is on the guide, I might put these people on, because there are some people who know what. If you talk about AI with somebody, ask them what it is. And what you want to really get to is somebody who's talking about machine learning by itself. Because I think there are a lot of people out there talking about it. And I'll happily put on like a list of, you know, people to follow. I mean, in education, there's very, very few. Mm. Rose Zuckin's one of them, which is why I'm delighted that she's writing this with us. Because she studied it for the last 20 years, you know, so or even more. And she's really seen it grow from, you know, the early era of AI and what it could do. So now it's in the mainstream. It's affecting our shopping, our searching. Mm. She's really focused on the educational value of it, which I think is really important. It's AI for good. And what are the ethical implications of this? What happens to your data? So I'm very happy to put on sort of a list of people who I think are trusted people, you know, on Twitter to follow, on Facebook, who are very vocal about the actual subject. In the Lords, for example, I'm very happy to hear that Lord Jim Knight is often talking about skills and technology. He's also very proficient in artificial intelligence and what it is. He really understands it. Another minister who's very proficient is Matt Hancock. Mm-hmm. So when Matthew Hancock, who's now been made Secretary of State of DCMS, when he talks about it, he really knows what he's talking about. And it's such a pleasure to have people, doesn't matter which party they represent, but who actually understand the technology and its implications. So I will create a list like that and obviously circulate it. I'll give it to you to put on your website and also circulate in social media. I think the thing is, ask questions. You know, why is your platform AI? How long has it been around for? Can you give me the name of a school that is using it today that I can contact? Teachers love to share. Head teachers love to share, right? So they won't mind. In fact, they love it because a lot of them are teaching schools, right? So they would love to be known as the pioneers of AI. Can I speak to them? Can I make sure that your technology is being used? What's the usage? You know, are you using it every day or is it a complete waste of money? Are you just subscribing to something and no one's logging in? You know, with Sentry, we provide the usage metrics of our platform every single day, what's live, to every teacher. And we email them usage metrics every week on PDF. So you can see straight away if you're not using it as a school, in which case you're not going to subscribe. But we have 100% subscription rate. But I think it's because they're now aware that, okay, I need to push this from sort of bottom up and sort of top down in a school. But get the usage metrics of any technology that you're purchasing into. They have it. They're tech companies, right? They're tracking everything. So get the metrics. Make sure you're using it. Ask the right questions. read the bullshit guide to AI from tomorrow. Get in touch. Ask Century. We know all about AI and neuroscience. We're happy to also advise on any other questions. Like, and the other thing is, if you want to learn about it, there is an intro course to AI for educators that's free on Century. So you just need to get in touch and ask. And it's being pushed to the entire world. And Askell, we've worked with Askell on that, the union, obviously, for leaders. And the idea is to actually educate the education sector about this technology so that people can make the right decisions.
Well, thank you very much, Ria.
Thank you so much. Bye.
I'm Ideas Factory, but I've been doing technology and education for a lot of years.
So I'm here with Julian Wood, who his fake name... or fake job title, should I say, is Head of Department at the University of Warwick. So where are you really from, Julian, anyway?
I'm from Sheffield. I'm a primary deputy teacher.
Okay, and then...
Love it.
Well, that is really good, and I'm pleased to know that, because it's important to have that love, and we hear too much about, well, obviously people are leaving, so how do you keep going?
What, as a teacher?
Yeah.
Passion.
But, you know, the workload, how do you...
You know what? I find as you get older, this is my 20th teaching year. I'm lucky to have experienced some of the things in life.
Yeah.
So I didn't start teaching until I was 28.
Yep.
And I've done lots of really rubbish jobs. And I find that as you get older in teaching, you become better at managing workload.
Okay.
And you get better at managing expectations. And so for example, I'm a year 5 teacher for 2 days. And for the other 3 days, I'm deputy head. You just have to, you know, I mark when I, in break times.
And do you mark by hand?
Yeah. Is there another way? By voice control. Yeah, I've just seen an app in bed.
Or you just,
mark,
you know.
By the power of your voice.
And whereabouts are you from? Tell me again.
I'm from Sheffield.
Sheffield, sorry.
It's a long way.
Yes. But it's beautiful up there. And you've got the peak district. Yeah, I have a friend that she lives in a little village outside of Sheffield called Dore.
Yeah, that's part of Sheffield.
Yeah.
Dore is part of Sheffield.
Okay.
Yeah. They've got a mat, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, they call it the Dore mat.
The Dore mat, shut up. See, I couldn't be more southern. I'm from the Isle of Wight. Are you staying for the Teach Meet?
Yeah.
Of course. There we go. That's good. Tell me about your challenges and tell me about if any of those challenges were met here, or if you're excited about anything you've seen, or how, what your general feeling is after. Have you been here for 1 day or more than 1 day?
No, I've just come today. Okay. And I had one challenge, which was the whiteboards.
Okay.
And my teachers, it has multi-touch, so basically you put your pen on and then you lean on it and it zips and it's terrible. And in actual fact, there's a story. There's basically a fly bumped into it, and it's that sensitive. But a fly bumped into the screen, and it changed pages, and it kept bumping into the screen and flicking the pages. So I was asking what they could do, and basically, yeah, it's fine. We can do something about it. They can switch.
They
off
kill the fly,
which is good. So that was the challenge: kill the fly. Yeah.
Kill the fly.
But no, the fly wasn't my challenge.
Look at that. I was doing an impression of a fly spray. No.
She was actually saying that smell and it was a deodorant.
This is the funny corner.
It's hilarious. But in terms of, I have seen some amazing things. I've seen an app called Assembler.
Yeah.
Assembler, where children or adults, because adults can play as well as children, can create a bit like Minecraft, a bit blocky, a bit Lego-y, create in virtual world, and then it appears as an augmented reality. Although actually it's not augmented because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But their creation appears
like an avatar type thing.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But it appears in the real world.
Ah.
Very clever.
So it's like an AR app.
Yeah. It is. And just trying to find the piece of paper there.
Doormat. I'm still laughing about doormat.
Here it is. So the other one was. Oh, it's not that one. That's another one. Yeah. Anyway, there's another one which basically you children model something. So they might model it in plasticine. And you can. It scans it, and then you can send it to a 3D printer.
Okay.
And that app is called Q Loan. It's an all in one, and it is absolutely incredible.
Wow.
Q-L-O-N-E. And basically, we did some work with the University of York,
okay,
and Durham and Edinburgh on 3D printing. and they've given us the 3D printer, and so this is a great way in for children. They can create something. This app will scan it and send it to the 3D printer.
And do you find the kids are really excited about 3D printing? Do they?
Oh my God,
yeah.
What?
So what is
adults,
it?
Adults are scared. I mean, the most exciting people of all time are children. Adults are excited about 3D.
Yeah.
Children
yeah.
are kind of off the scale.
Like, catatonic about it. Yeah.
Yes. Completely.
What is it? Why do you think? Why is that?
Well, I mean, the thing is, right, with anything technology, I'm a massive fan of things that are concrete, and I like
tactile.
Yeah, tactile. Yeah. And it's like, the thing is with 3D printing is it you can realise creations. So if you make something in plasticine, you can take that plasticine home, but there's nothing permanent about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
by making something 2D into a 3D, it's just something magical about that, yes.
So you were telling me that you've been in EdTech, whatever you want to call it, for, is it 20 years? Did you make that up?
No, I've been teaching for 20 years.
But you must have seen these things come and go, yeah?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So in your opinion, what are the top three best and worst things that you've seen? So which are the things that have actually made a difference? And which, and you don't have to just say names of companies necessarily, but which are the...
Yes, your lawyer's sitting right next to you.
As if I had a lawyer.
Kind of doing the kind of get up the stage
yeah.
motion. Worst thing of all time in terms of technology is anything that says that it's going to improve children's results in class. So I know that one of my good friends who leads with this exact line, if somebody comes along and says they're going to boost their children's levels, they're a liar. There's nothing technology can do that. So that's number one. Number two is anything that tracks children or kind of monitors data is just emperor's new clothes. I mean, it's like a database. Why spend millions when you've got a spreadsheet?
So it's more about knowing how to analyse the existing database. It doesn't have to necessarily be as sophisticated.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to say something that is... The best thing is never pay for anything on the internet, because you can always find something that's free. Everything that I've mentioned today is free. Don't buy anything.
But then you mentioned about data.
Yes.
So isn't some of that free stuff essentially paid for with data?
No, because it's not dealing with data.
But you have to, you usually use your data as a currency to access it. So they then have data to...
No, not necessarily.
No?
So a little tip for anybody listening. never give out anybody's real names.
Yeah. I should have known this
never
already.
Give out anybody's real names.
Okay.
Because they can use it as data. So there's a general data protection act that's just coming out. And lots of apps and internet things require pupil data. But there's nothing stopping you to invent their own data. So if any internet kind of tool or software requires me to input the children's names, I say to the children, like, okay, what's your favourite film? And they use that as their surname. And then if you weren't called that as a first name, what would you be called? And in actual fact, they remember that. So Horatio Star Wars. But he remembers that more than his real name. And then, therefore, you're not selling data. You just made up rubbish.
And then who are you excited about meeting? I'm sure there's many people that you meet up with us once a year.
You,
at the
you,
Teach
you,
Meet. No,
you're a legend.
No, but you've got old friends, I'm sure, that you need to meet.
Yes.
So who out there are you excited? Who do you learn from and who do you enjoy connecting
everybody.
With?
Yeah. My motto is always learning. So, yeah, everybody. I mean, if you want me to name names?
Yeah, go for it.
The old tech vanguard, so these people have been going for a long time. So Ian Anderson, of course, Dougal McCormick, Bill Lord, Tony Parkin, Dawn Hallibone, Charlie Dean. It's just, there's loads, there's too many to mention. I mean, you know, this is primary Liam, Lee Parkinson. Lee Parkinson is who is ICT Mr. P. A little known fact is that when he first started, he wasn't Lee Parkinson, he was his school. And I said to him, Be yourself, don't be a school. And he changed it because of what I told him. And then I said, why don't you come to my school? So he did. So I've known Lee. And a little phone, it's me and Lee share a birthday.
Thank you, Julian.
My pleasure.
So, yeah, we've got to the end of Bets on the Friday. And I was on my way to the Educate drinks, but I've either got lost or they are not here. But very happily, I have bumped into Mark Anderson, Ollie Lewis, and the two team members from Vocal Recall in the Bet Futures area. So welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Mark, one of the things I wanted to do today, but again, time has passed me by, was go to your event this afternoon where attendees were basically rocking up and then saying what the best things they've seen today. So as I couldn't attend that, can you give us a quick reprise on what things people came out with and what they were excited about as well?
Yeah, so it was really good. We called it the Bet Geek Off, and in a sort of a teach meet style, people would sort of stand up and just share that one thing they'd found, which was sort of really rocked. It really, really grabbed their attention and what have you. And really interestingly, it was like about 90% of the things that people came back with were the things that are happening right here, where we're stood right now in the Bet Futures area. So things like to be were really well represented. The Wonder Why Society, people talked about Unio. We had people talking about all sorts, including Vocal Recall, who are here with us now. And I'm really excited about Vocal Recall as well. I think it's a fantastic tool. And these guys are just brilliant. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen you tweet about Vocal Recall. And I'm not sure if it was Vocal Recall or a similar thing, but I think it was Vocal Recall that Joe Dale was sat in my front room because I was putting him up for another event in Hackney. And, yeah, he was talking about that and getting very excited about it. So we can talk to the team behind that in a minute, but just to go back to some of the organisations that you mentioned, can you tell us a little bit about what they do and why people are getting excited as well?
Yeah, so the Wonder Why Society, the guy who was talking about those is from a primary school where P4C is really important. And what the Wonder Why Society do is get the children thinking in sort of creative ways and getting that whole sort of psychology and sort of thing going on, sorry, philosophy for children going on. So it's really great resource there. Like to Be is a new thing with a guy who's an Antarctic explorer, Anthony Ginman. But it's also linked to another guy called Steve Wheeler, who I'm sure you'll be aware of. Okay. He's a bit of an ed tech hero of mine, to be fair.
Yep.
But he's heavily involved in that, and Like to Be is a sort of a careers mentorship kind of program for children. They've got the likes of Chris Packham and other sort of like, you know, highly well regarded people that schools can tap into to speak to them or contact them and get feedback about how they can get into that sort of career and what have you.
Yeah.
Just really engaging and authentic. Then there's Unio. They were mentioned by a few people, and they actually sponsor that event as well. And Unio's a content delivery platform where you can do marking, assessments and feedback in real time, and you can see all the work that the children are doing on screen all in one go and what have you. I mentioned the one I sort of brought up was Vocal Recall, which is for me a real sort of Ron Seal product. It does what it says on the tin, and like all best ed tech, it's just really, really simple but massively scalable and have a big impact on increasing the efficiency of teachers. Anything you can do to reduce like marking load and speeding up those sort of processes in the classroom is a great thing. And it's no surprise that the two guys who are involved in it are, guess what, teachers.
Yeah.
Looking for a solution to try and make their lives that little bit easier.
So that's really interesting, because Damien Hines obviously talked about reducing teacher workload on Tuesday.
Yeah.
We've got a head of physics here from the Oratory School, so Ollie. So welcome, Ollie.
Hi, hello.
So I was interested because I was looking at the article around that speech, and then underneath were all the Twitter comments from teachers. So saying, yeah, but actually if you use data and if you have to analyse that, sometimes it feels like it's adding to your workload. So what's the kind of balance between, I suppose it's using EdTech to reduce the workload, but how do I identify what's actually going to make that happen, and what have you enjoyed and found interesting here as well?
For me, in terms of my actual marking, I have to big up the Vocal Recall guys, really. Because what they've done is they've made my life much easier to provide really, really high quality feedback that's personalised to the students in a really short period of time. You know, what I can tell them in you know, a minute's worth of content of me talking is 5 minutes of me writing that information. So there's really, these guys have bridged the gap for me, I think, in terms of reducing my mark load via using technology as the bridge.
And when did you come across that, and when were you able to start using that? Because I know that some schools are still kind of saying, no, you absolutely have to kind of use a written form.
Me personally, when did I find out about a Vocal Recall?
Yeah.
Or I spotted them on Twitter, actually, just before Christmas. and I've been using it ever since, and one of the departments of my school is also now using it. In terms of how do you bridge that gap in schools between the kind of traditional handwritten feedback, I guess you can call it, and using technology to your advantage, I think you've got to, Mark talks about purpose quite a lot, and I think these guys have hit the nail on the head. You know, they are teachers and they understand that you don't necessarily need to do it in a traditional fashion, and they've closed that net, as it were.
Yeah, and then the senior leadership team are fine with that. They're just like,
they're happy with it, because you've got the dialogue there, and you know the feedback that you've got is you can access it. Anyone can scan it. A parent can scan it at home and listen to the feedback. You know, if an inspector comes in, he can scan it and listen to the feedback. You know, I can get my history up on their website and look at the feedback that I've given to the students. So anyone can actually access it, provided they've got the student's book and can see the QR code. So it's a great tool.
Okay. So we've done a lot of delaying. So now I'm going to finally speak to the CTO and CEO here. So welcome, Graham and Will. So you're doing this alongside your day jobs as well?
Yeah.
And how's that going? Because you've already got the workload and then this as well, but it must be your passion project, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, it was Graham's idea, and I was teaching with Graham on a charity project in Southwark, and that's how we met.
Okay.
So he wanted it made and sort of pitched it to me, and so I've agreed to make it. In terms of the doing it alongside the day job, it's been a real sort of exercise in finding the right tools and using them sort of safely, because we can't afford to do any frantic sort of fixing of stuff, so I have to spend the part of time I work on it just making sure it's really working.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it's great now because that's made it really quite reliable.
And for people who have listened in, and obviously I'm sure they've got a sense now of what it is, but to go back to basics, what exactly is Vocal Recall?
So I'm Graham, so just handing over from Will. Vocal Recall is an app that allows teachers to attach audio directly to stickers, and these stickers are QR codes, and they are generated beforehand. So we have a server that will generate code sheets and email them to you, and you can print them out on A4 or stickers, and you can just have a batch of them on your desk, just record a message with the app, and then just scan one of the stickers, and that audio within seconds will be attached to that sticker, and you can stick it on anything. And we found this is being used for verbal feedback, which is what I originally wanted it to be used for, but it's also being used in schools in many creative ways, such as languages, so that they're using it to create interactive worksheets so they can actually hear the students talk the language or speak the language without having to be with them. And I know that's something language teachers found difficult, so we've got a French teacher we've heard from, and she does some written questions, and then she'll stick one of our codes down and do some oral questions, and the children have to scan it and listen, and then she'll actually stick one of our blank codes down beneath it for each student, a different one, and the student will go home and their homework is to respond to the questions, and there's no emails backwards and forwards, there's no kind of inclusivity with just a single VLE where people need to be able to access it with logons. And we found that the app allows verbal feedback for everybody. And before now, there have been VLEs which allow you to provide verbal feedback, but you've got to be in that ecosystem. And this is kind of a decentralized way of giving verbal feedback.
Okay, and then, so what's next?
We both work in a South London school. We really pushed it from September. We did a closed beta with some people just to check it worked, kind of just before summer, and the idea was conceived last May. So it's been quite a fast process.
And what about the uptake? So how many people have started using it?
It's been incredible. And we're getting a bit worried that we're going to have to work really, really hard now in order to keep up with demand. We've got codes that we sell on Amazon, and they are selling out really quickly. And I spend my Sundays packing these up. So we need to find a way that we can make those more readily and quickly. And it's just been very, very quick growth. We're at about 5,000 users at the moment.
And so are you charging for that service, or do you charge for the sheets, or how does that work?
It's completely free. People can choose to pay if they want to by buying our codes off Amazon. Okay. And, you know, teachers are really busy, so if they have a departmental budget and they can get the codes on that, then some of them do. And we really appreciate that support because it's helping us maintain our servers.
And then if you could go anywhere next, you were talking about the workload on the Sunday, so I'm imagining you want to build up your team or, you know, sort of do that next phase of things as well.
Yeah, well, we need to think about getting some extra staff in, and it's really kind of, where do we go from there?
So any angel investors listening in, you should get in contact with you.
Yeah, exactly. We'd love to hear from people who want to be part of this tale, really.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you all so much for taking part, and I hope you have a good rest of your Friday evenings as well. Okay,
thank you very much.
This week's episode. If you're interested in co-creating EdTech and informing EdTech design, why not come along to our next meetup at Runway East in London on Monday, the April the 30th, 2018, on hiring and retaining talent, including advisory networks. All details are in the show notes, and it'd be great to have you there. If you're outside of the UK, why not set up your own listeners' meetup? And beyond April, we're looking to London Tech Week, so go and check out their programme, which will feature more EdTech content this year and runs in London 11th to the 17th of June 2018. And if that's all a bit London-centric, take a look at EduTech Africa, which doesn't take place until the 9th and 10th of October in Johannesburg. That's all for now. See you soon.